ECHO Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
ECHO Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello, and welcome to ECHO Report. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Robert Schull.
In this edition of ECHO Report, environmental correspondent Zero Rose gets updates from Stephen Stewart of Indiana Forest Alliance about plans to log and burn in Hoosier National Forest and free events this weekend for the total solar eclipse visible from Bloomington this coming Monday.
And now for your environmental reports. Over the past 2 weeks, we have been sharing with you information about the different types of plastic and how they are used. Today, we will educate you on several more of the different types of plastics and their common uses. There is polyethylene terephthalate, that is PET, which is clear, strong, and lightweight and is commonly used in beverage bottles, food containers, and polyester fibers for textiles. Polyurethane, that is PU, is versatile material used in foam insulation, upholstery, adhesives, coatings, and elastomers, whatever they are. Then we have polycarbonate, PCO, which is clear and impact resistant and is used in eyeglasses, lenses, safety goggles, medical devices, and electronic components. Next is acrylonitrile butane. Yeah, that is ABS, which is tough and heat resistant and is used in automotive parts, electronic housings, toys, and appliances. Now we have polylidene fluoride, that's PVDF, which is chemically resistant and is used in chemical processing equipment, piping, and coatings. And last, we have non-polyamide, which is strong, durable, and heat resistant and is used in textiles, ropes, automotive parts, and engineering plastics. From this list that we have shared with you, which is included four from last week, you can see how intrusive plastic has become part of our everyday lives in every way. You use it, you eat it, and you wear it. There is no way to not have it in your homes or lives. So what can you do to make a difference, make your life more green, and protect Mother Earth? Next week, we will share with you some of the ways that you can have less plastic in your life.
Indiana Business Journal reports Boone County officials are considering a two-year moratorium on new solar power and wind energy projects while the county updates its comprehensive plan. The move would come as Virginia-based Hexagon Energy develops plans for a 3,000-acre solar farm north of Jamestown in western Boone County, and Florida-based Next Energy Energy Resources renews interest in building a solar farm near Zionsville. In 2021, the Zionsville Board of Zoning Appeals and the Boone County Area Plan Commission blocked NextEra's plan for the $210 million, 1,660-acre solar farm in Union and Marion Townships. The proposed Brickyard Solar Project would have brought approximately 675,000 solar panels to various tracts of land along U.S. 421. Boone County Area Plan Commission Executive Director Stephen Elkins told IBJ he is not aware of any wind energy projects that have been submitted or discussed for unincorporated Boone County. He said wind projects were discussed about 15 years ago but never went forward. Earlier this month, the Boone County Area Plan Commission delivered a letter to the Boone County Commissioners recommending a moratorium on solar power and wind energy projects. Supporters and opponents of the solar project spoke at Monday's meeting. Jeff Jacob, an attorney with the Indianapolis-based Hackman Hewlett, LLP, who is representing Hexagon Energy, called the potential moratorium fundamentally unfair for Hexagon, which he said has 3,000 acres under contract in Boone County. Don't take this extreme measure of suggesting that you're protecting your comprehensive plan, Jacobs said. If you're protecting your comprehensive plan, let's stop all development for 2 years. But don't focus on one business that has actively been discussing with the community on how to develop. Jordan Burke, a project development for Hexagon, said the company understands and respects that Western Boone County is historically focused on agriculture. Burke said farming can occur within a solar facility and that soil can be farmed after solar panels are removed. The reasons farmers are interested in working with us, and we're working with a lot of old farmers in Western Boone, is they don't believe this will permanently affect or erase their farm ground, said Burke. Jack Bowen, a farmer who has leased land to Hexagon, asked the commissioners to not approve a moratorium. He said his family has lived on his 100-acre farm since 1902, and he believes that solar farms in western Boone County would be a buffer against housing and commercial developers from building subdivisions and warehouses near his land.
IndyStar reports that work will begin soon in Tippecanoe County on the first segment of highway in the U.S. that will wirelessly charge electric vehicles as they travel, a project that could help define the future of EV charging. The Indiana Department of Transportation is teaming up with Purdue University and Cummins Incorporated to install the technology on a state highway in West Lafayette as part of a pilot project, according to draft press release obtained by IndyStar. The first segment of the project will cover about a quarter mile along U.S. Highway 52 / U.S. Highway 231 between Lindbergh Road and Cumberland Avenue, the release said. Indiana's pilot segment comes after multiple years of testing and research. In the future, the goal is to expand the research by electrifying a section of Indiana Interstate. The ability to charge on the go would reduce the need for charging brakes and extend the range of electric vehicles, which currently is one of their major drawbacks.
This little bit. AccuWeather meteorologists are forecasting 20 to 25 named storms across the Atlantic Basin in 2024, including 8 to 12 hurricanes, 4 to 7 major hurricanes, and 4 to 6 direct U.S. impacts. This is all above the 30-year historical average of 14 named storms, 7 hurricanes, 3 major hurricanes, and 4 direct U.S. impacts. The temperatures of waters of the Atlantic along our coast are already at July levels.
And now we turn to Zero Rose and Stephen Stewart to learn about recent developments in forest protection, legislation to expand the DEEM wilderness and educational nature hikes, other upcoming IFA events, and the totality ceremony at the Tibetan-Mongolian Buddhist Culture Center.
We have with us today Stephen Stewart of the Indiana Forest Alliance, some new developments in forest protection, and they have an event coming up this weekend that is free. So, Stephen, what's up with this schedule of proposed actions? I believe that just came down in the last day or so.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Zero. Appreciate you having me back to the ECA report. The United States Forest Service for the Hoosier National Forest every 3 months for quarterly puts out a publication called the Schedule of Proposed Actions, or SOAP. I've mentioned it on the program before. There are two major changes that have happened for the projects in that schedule. One is for the House and South project, which is over in Jackson County and, influences the water supply of Lake Monroe that we've talked about in the past. They have extended that date for a next decision date. They're expecting in June of this year. And then the Buffalo Springs down in Orange County and Crawford County, Indiana, again, that 20,000 plus acre project there is scheduled for a next decision in July. Of course, from looking at these in the history of different events, we believe that since the next SOPA is due to come out in July, that it is quite possible, since the House and South project has a projected date of June, that date might be in concrete. So we may be looking forward to hearing something from the Forest Service on how they've modified that House and South project to protect the water source and the endangered species and various other aspects of that project. So,
and so, is there still room for people to give public comment on that, or is that just people that got their comments in earlier?
Well, we are expecting that they will release that to the public again with this decision. There would be a period of commenting called pre-objectional period. If there is anything indeed that you see in there for their finalized proposal that goes along with a proper, study and with all the potential effects from that. And that's usually around 45 days. So we can't really predict it except through this schedule that they've published. Be prepared, to look for something in June for that, I would predict. And it's possible, for the Buffalo Springs project that they might extend it again. I know that with the Biden's call for a inventory on all mature and old growth in these areas, which had not been done previously, that is taking some time. So they are having to do that according to their, the head of the United States Forest Service.
And some of those prescribed burns are going on, right?
Yes, this is the season for prescribed burns. So there are previous projects all over the state that had already been approved in the Hoosier National Forest and other organizations too. And so they are out there now doing some prescribed burns. In fact, one was gotten out of control down in the southwestern part of the state recently, and they had to call in firefighters to contain that. But that's been kind of par for the course that we've seen, they're very strict on weather restrictions, but they went out there when the wind was, blowing and the air quality turned really bad down in that area. And there was some property damage and some critical, wildlife ecosystems down there that needed to be protected, and it got out of control. So there's always that chance. And so that's why we are so adamant about following their actions with these different management techniques to make sure that, we're not killing a bunch of turtles or we're affecting, endangered species habitat or burning down more forest than what they expect. So,
and everybody's all a Twitter about the coming eclipse totality here in Bloomington. And I know you guys have a couple of days of events coming up, which would, I guess that's Sunday and Monday next week.
That's right. Yeah. Oh boy. It's in all the news, isn't it? We're seeing it in the media. This is an incredible thing that, here in the central part of Indiana, the southern part, we're able to see coming up the complete totality of the solar eclipse. And there are parts of Indiana that, have not been able to view a totality of an eclipse since 830 something AD. This is more than just a once in a lifetime event. There were many, that have been following these type of things, that have been planning this for years in preparation for this rare event. And one of those is the Simon Foundation in New York. And they have, with Indiana University Center for Rural Engagement here, have given IFA, Indiana Forest Alliance, a grant to celebrate this, the nature and the cosmological connection to the animals. And so on April 7th, thanks to the, DNR Forestry Division, their alliance to do four hikes, public hikes, all free to the public out at Yellowwood State Forest here in town. Beautiful Brown County Lake. You're going to love it out there. But we're doing one on the ever popular Hoosier Morels. So mushroom identification hike at 10 a.m. there. And then we'll also have another hike with, over 40 years of experience. Our director, Jeff Stant, has been a forest advocate for almost all of his life, is going to be offering a long extended hike for 4 hours, starting at 10 a.m. out there. So that one's free as well. And then we got a forest management walk and talk to where the Forestry Division had did some management in these areas, this one trail of the resource management trail over the years, and they've marked those for what their intended objections are. Results that they were looking for. And when you go out to this area, we'll have a chance to observe, right firsthand, like science, citizen science here. You can see what they projected they thought was going to happen, and you can judge for yourself whether or not that has happened. And perhaps, look closer and identify perhaps, if it succeeded, why did it succeed? If it, came less than full to succeed, what could be improved, So be a part of that and really see firsthand what's going on in your public forest. And then we'll end the day there with our wildflowers, ephemerals, and herbals hike along the lake edge. Beautiful, lots of wildflowers. Indiana is known for its very short, ephemeral, blooming spring flowers, and it's just, it's very artistic and beautiful and very pristine nature. You're going to love it. And then we are teaming up with the Tibetan Mongolian Buddhist Cultural Center here in Bloomington for the actual viewing of the eclipse then on Monday. And, you know, we're expecting, you know, some people coming from all over the country. We've got a reporter coming down from the Washington Post in Washington, D.C. They'll be down for the weekend for events. We've got some IU Media School students that'll be there as well. And we even have it. We've been contacted by a NASA scientist that is going to be coming to take very, you know, high resolution documentation of this eclipse and the days before and after it. So, you know, we're proud to be part of this eclipse, and I'm just so excited at what's we're getting from it. And the last and final piece, which is kind of the biais des results, is we're partnering with the Monroe County History Center, and we have and some artist groups here locally, and we're collecting art in a public show that will be then put into a time capsule that's going to be stored at the History Center to commemorate this landmark event, this landmark time in our history here in Bloomington, Indiana. And that will be reopened in 2044. So, you know, not only having a big effect on our lives now, but in the future as well. So as the protection of our forest not only affects our lives now, but affects it in the future as well. So we're proud to tell the folks about this and offer everything up for free thanks to the IUCRE and Simons Foundation. So our extended thanks to everyone, and we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, and that's a lot of science in the events that isn't often a thing on what people are going out and doing, thinking about. And is 2044, is that the next eclipse? Is that why it's being brought back up then?
So to the majority of websites and science foundations that we've been able to see, the next time that any in the lower continental United States will see a total eclipse is going to be in 2044, and it's going to be out west. It won't even be in Indiana. Hmm. The next one in Indiana you'll be able to see is 2099. But, you know, everyone would be, you know, more than likely very old or gone that was involved. So we really wanted those family members, you know, the kids and grandkids of those folks who are submitting this art and playing a part of this significant event to commemorate that again in 2044 when that that eclipse hits. I believe it's Montana is where it's going to be.
And so is there anything else that you guys have going on or to report about?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we reminder about the Senate bill, S-2990, that is gaining headway and support exponentially. That is for the, expansion of the Charles D. Wilderness, our only Indiana National Wilderness Area, borders on Lake Monroe. And we're going to be, this bill will add 15,300 acres to that. It's going to be wild, pristine habitat that's going to protect our water supply and the wildlife ecosystem that's there. And then also the creation of a 29,382 acre. I know it's real precise there, but it's incredible. The Benjamin Harrison National Recreation Area. So, and the influence of that, you know, the primary reasoning, you know, is to protect the Lake Monroe water source, as I've mentioned many times here. And also it's to, celebrate recreation opportunities within our public forest. So it's not as stringent as to what recreational activities can be had there as the deem is. And it's more of a, you know, fully accessible to a wide range of the population. And we are looking forward to all the opportunities and new trails there and hunting and fishing and hiking and horseback riding and trail riding, looking for, you know, the expansion of that. And so these are all landmark, you know, if we get this bill passed, and it's due to its gaining popularity on Capitol Hill. You can contact Erin Houchin. She here in District 9 for the southeastern part of the state. If you're in her district, she's in Indiana, you know, contact her. Tell her that you're supporting it. You know, she's looking to gain information from her constituents about it. And they are poised to sign on board for that, as well as Todd Young. He's our, you know, the 9th Congressional District, which is kind of south central Bloom, Indiana, from Minneapolis down. If you're in that area, contact them about this bill, you know, and tell them what it means to you Hoosiers. You know, that it's helping our wildlife, our future, for climate protection, our public water supply, our recreation, our health. You know, and going in the future, it's going to save our forest for our future descendants. So, but yeah, it's just needs a little contact from you, which where, again, you can contact Aaron Houchin, Todd Young with a letter, a phone call, an email, and really you'll get this unique, large, contiguous, which means, you know, all together, wild forested area, the largest in the Midwest, short of a couple in Michigan, I believe. And that's going to be Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan area. And it's a landmark bill and really something for the environment that's really going to have a lasting and sounding effect in our, you know, future of uncertainty we're facing the world around. So.
And that was originally put forth by Mike Braun, wasn't it?
That's correct. Senator Mike Braun is the one that co-authored that bill and then is the first that is he created that bill for passing. So we appreciate Mr. Braun, you know, Senator's help with that and backing of that and understanding that, you know, really backing his constituency here in the Hoosier State, both economically, you know, and health-wise and so many other ways we've mentioned. So we appreciate that. And you can contact him to show your support as well. And he does have that bill on his website that you can actually see the exact wording of the bill and see a map of that as well. And IFA, IndianaForestAlliance.org. We also have a, at the very top, you'll see it, Expand the Deem. You click on that and it'll take you to a map and really show you what's there and what future is going to be there. But, you know, without this legislation at the national level, this kind of protection is not afforded to properties and to forest and lakes in the country. So this is something big and very important you can be a part of.
And on that initial schedule of proposed actions about the forests to do with Buffalo Springs and Houston South, is there a particular place people can look that up?
Yeah, so specifically for the Buffalo Springs project and the Houston South project, they both have their own page that the Hoosier National Forest, the United States Forest Service, will update information, and it will be posted there. It will be covered in media, and of course, I'll be watching a close eye on it, that if there are any developments, that gets sent to media, and you can contact IFA at any time to inquire. Through our website or through email or by phone, and we'll be more than happy to keep you updated on that as the time comes. And you can also sign up for a newsletter and be notified by the Forest Service on any of these projects that you see. You simply have to contact Marion Mason, their public affairs officer, and I believe she's in the Bedford office, and she'll be more than happy to set you up with getting, you know, an immediate update to your inbox. But, you know, be on the lookout for that because something's coming down the line very soon, I believe.
And it's the website again?
Yeah. You can go to IndianaForestAlliance.org to find our contact information, or go to the United States Forest Service Hoosier National Forest webpage, and they have specific pages within that for their current projects, both for the Buffalo Springs, the Houston South, and the other projects that they are currently proposing as well.
Well, great. And there you go, people. There's something of substance for you to be involved with for these festivities and important work that and developments in the government for you to follow up on.
Thank you for having us. Have a good day.
This is In Nature.
Which mammal has more teeth than any other in the state? If you answered opossum, you are correct. The Virginia opossum has 50 teeth, reflecting its prehistoric roots of 70 million years. The often maligned opossum is also known as being the only native marsupial in North America. Although rat-like in appearance, opossums are more closely related to kangaroos. An opossum gives birth to as many as 20 bean-sized, underdeveloped young who must climb to their mother's pouch. Those who survive the climb then compete for one of the mother's 13 teats, where they remain attached for 2 months before leaving the pouch. The opossum is an excellent tree climber due to the opposable toe on each of its back feet and its long, hairless, prehensile tail that can grip tree limbs to stabilize the animal as it climbs. Although slow and seemingly not so smart, the opossum, as a species, has done well. It can be found throughout most of Central America and the United States, having expanded into Canada over the last few decades. Opossums live in woodlands, farmland, and urban areas and prefer places near water. They are nocturnal and solitary. The opportunistic opossum will eat anything available, including insects, fruits, grains, garbage, and pet food. Its success can be attributed to its adaptability to human habitats. Opossums not only tolerate human settlements, they flourish and have a greater survival rate near them. City opossums on average weigh a third more than their country cousins. And those 50 teeth, when frightened, the opossum may hiss and bear its mouth full of teeth, yet they seldom bite. This small marsupial is really quite placid, preferring to avoid confrontation.
You've been listening to In Nature.
For Eco Report, I am Juliana Daly.
And I am Robert Shull.
Are you looking for a way to make a difference on environmental issues? Here at Eco Report, we are currently looking for reporters, engineers, and segment producers. Our goal is to report facts on how we're all affected by global climate disruption and the ongoing assaults on our air, land, and water. We also celebrate ecologists, tree huggers, soil builders, and an assortment of champions who actively protect and restore our natural world, particularly those who are active in South Central Indiana. All levels of experience and all ages are welcome, and we provide the training you'll need. WFHB also offers internships. To volunteer for Eco Report, give us a call at 812-323-1200 or email us at earth@wfhb.org.
And upcoming events, the Indiana Forest Alliance is hosting a free two-day 2014 solar eclipse viewing event in Yellowwood State Forest.
It's 2024.
Yeah, that's this year right now, isn't it? Yeah. And the Bloomington Tibetan Mongolian Buddhist Culture Center on Sunday, April 7th and Monday, April 8th, guided hikes will be held at Yellowwood Lake on the 7th. Beginning at 11 a.m. on April 8th, the monks will perform a medicine Buddha puja with more activities throughout the day.
Enjoy a Griffey Lake total eclipse paddle at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve on Monday, April the 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. You must register in advance at bloomington.in.gov/parks. Canoes and paddles will be provided.
There will be a snake meet and greet at the Brown County State Park on Friday, April 12th from 4 to 4:30 p.m. in the Nature Center. Get a personal look at Indiana's native snakes. Learn about their unique traits and how they affect your life.
Take a Lake Ogle hike at Brown County State Park on Saturday, April the 13th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Enjoy a guided hike on Trail 7 and hear the history of the lake and learn about the flora and fauna around the lake. And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's headlines were written by Norm Holey and Juliana Daly. Today's news feature was produced by Zero Rose and edited by Cade Young. Juliana Daly assembled the script, which was edited by the Eco Report team. Juliana Daly compiled our events calendar. Cade Young and Noel Herhesky-Snyder produced today's show. Brandon Blewett is our engineer.
For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Robert Shull.
And this is Eco Report. Thank you for listening, and have fun watching the solar eclipse.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana.
Bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.